Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same-day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
In August 2015, in Ohio, USA, police received a call stating that a woman had been set alight at a petrol station. When emergency responders arrived at the scene, the victim had suffered horrific burns to 95% of her body. Despite being given just hours to live, she'd spend 7 months in a coma, defy all doctors' expectations by clinging on to life for 2 years, and make legal history by becoming the first victim to testify at their own murder trial. This is what happens when domestic violence has deadly consequences. This is the murder of Judy Malinowski.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
Today's case is one of those where it's mind-blowing. The bravery of Judy Ann Malinowski is absolutely astonishing and stunning. And even though she is the hero in this story, she is also absolutely the victim in this story. And marrying the two of those is really important for me today, because this is both a tragedy and a celebration of strength. And I hopefully will be able to balance that. So even though we're talking about the end of an incalculably important human being, we're also talking about the strength of her, the resilience of her, and the steadfast nature that she needed to manage and sustain to get the result that we're going to talk about today regarding how this plays out eventually in the trial of her killer. So who was Judy Ann Malinowski? Well, she was born on the 26th of August, 1983. She was born in Ohio in the US. She has a mother, Bonnie Bowes, a father, Thomas Hensel, and she grew up with her brother, Patrick, and her sister, Danielle. Really close to the family. She's close to all of them, but particularly close to her siblings, and Judy was the eldest of those siblings. Now, she had a really hard time when she was 14. Her father died. And you have to imagine, he was 40 years old at the time, so he's incredibly young. And as a little girl, when you're growing up with your dad, if you've got a good relationship, you tend to be treated like a princess. And arguably, to lose that person who raises you up, who reminds you of what an incredible human being you are, the person who's your protector and mentor, it's going to be really challenging. And for Judy to go through that trauma, we have to be aware it would have had a really large impact, particularly at 14, which is such a pivotal point in our teenage experience. Now, looking back on her childhood, it was basically idyllic. That's the best way to describe it. She was absolutely gorgeous. You know, she was one of those very fortunate children who grew into a very fortunate looking woman. She was incredibly pretty. She took part in pageants. She's actually named Homecoming Queen and Miss New Albany. And even though we have pageants in the UK and people get very invested in them, very passionate about them, in the US, obviously, they are just huge. They're like pageants on steroids. But that shows that she's quite a committed individual. Also, there's a lot of fundraising and charity work that gets involved in pageantry. So essentially, again, we're seeing somebody with a good heart. Now, her family described her as somebody who was just as beautiful on the outside as she was on the inside. And that's so important, because you can be gorgeous to look at, but it doesn't mean that you are a nice person. But Judy really was. She was hugely popular at school. She had absolutely tons of friends. In fact, people said she was literally friends with everybody that she met. So she genuinely lived by that statement that a stranger is somebody who's just waiting to be a friend, essentially, and she would make you that friend. She was seen as an individual who wasn't at all egocentric. She was constantly putting other people's needs before her own. And when she looked to the future, the dreams that she had were to be a school teacher and also to one day have a family. And again, that's a representation, isn't it, of the type of person that she is. She wants to be around children, both her own and other people's, and she wants to be a mentor to those individuals, which is exactly what being a school teacher is. So again, just that reflection of somebody who's really lovely, and Judy certainly fits that perfect paradigm of an expectation that we have of what a good person appears and acts like. Now, she makes a decision to get married young, and she was young. She has two daughters, Kaylin and Madison. And even though we all appreciate that if you can get married young and have children and rear those children with a lifetime partner, it's amazing. And research psychologically says that for those people who manage to do that, the outcomes are so positive on happiness. But we also know that when you're young, you're going through so many transitionary phases. You know, you think about how your hairstyle used to be when you were 20, when you were 18, and then 20 years down the line, you're often looking back and thinking, what was I thinking? That may just be me. It might just be me thinking about my hairstyles. I did have a flat top at one point. It was really not a good look. But the point is, you invest yourself into situations and passions and you feel fully committed to them. But because you're growing and learning and developing, sometimes they don't stick. So even though she gets married young and has these two daughters, it gets problematic and she and the children's father actually split up. And I would say that signifies and symbolises further trauma in her world because, first of all, she's lost her dad. She was probably looking for another male role model who was going to make her feel safe. And then she's got two children. There is a level of stress, even though it's invited stress and it's wonderful, it's still stressful. And then if that isn't problematic enough, we get to 2005, and bear in mind, at this point, she's just aged 21 years of age, 21, and she's diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It's impossible to imagine how a girl of that age, and she is genuinely still a girl at that age, suddenly has to manage the reality that she's been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, which is one of the most problematic and often has really poor outcomes. She's a young mum. She's dealing with all of this while still trying to figure out who she is. Now, thankfully, she goes through treatment and she does beat the disease and she starts to get on with her life. And I imagine that that takes a huge amount of resilience and a huge amount of self-belief. But in spite of the fact that she manages that, in April 2006, she gets more bad news. The cancer's back. And at this point, she has to go through more treatment, more invasive surgery, and ultimately, that includes a full hysterectomy. Now, as a woman who has struggled with fertility her whole life, you know, one of the problems that I've had is that I've always had to have help having children, and I'm very blessed that that was something that was positive and possible, albeit expensive. The reality is being in your early 20s and basically having any future opportunities to have children taken away from you, as far as actually birthing them yourself, again, that is highly traumatic. That is something that it is very difficult to conceive of at any age. But when you are a young woman, it steals so many opportunities and possibilities. And I feel like Judy just went through period after period of trauma. And yet here we are again. She goes through all of that surgery, through the horror of being diagnosed once again with cancer, and yet she gets through it. She wins that battle against cancer and she goes into remission. But there is a big problem this time. Because of the amount of surgery that she's had, because understandably, there will have been a level of pain that she'll be enduring, of course there will, she ends up walking away from this situation, healed from cancer, but sadly addicted to opioids. Because following the surgery, she's given incredibly strong painkillers, OxyContin and Paracet. They are very strong opioids. And if you consider the fact that we can all acknowledge that pain relief is important in certain circumstances, but when we think about Purdue Pharmacy, who was going out and basically getting as many people addicted to, for example, OxyContin as possible, the corruption was huge. It's ruined so many people's lives. And they knowingly did that. And she was unfortunately a victim of this, and she becomes addicted to those particular drugs. Now, after her medical insurance expires, because we all know in the States, it's not like in the NHS in the UK where there is a level of free service, she couldn't actually afford to see a doctor. And when you are addicted to high level opioids, so the heroin family basically, and suddenly you can't get treatment, what are you gonna do? So she can't actually get any help with getting the opioids that she's been prescribed, that they've basically given her and got her addicted to. No, now that medical opportunity is expired and she can't get the help, she has to now turn to illicit drugs to get her fix. And there's only one place you're gonna go when you've got an opioid addiction, and that's heroin. And so this begins an incredibly challenging period for her of addiction. Her family are incredible. They step in, they help to look after her children during that time. And she is somebody who, like I said, has not been a willing participant in this journey, because she would have unknowingly started taking those drugs, believing it was in her best interest. Because you know how it is. If somebody prescribes you something in a white coat and it all looks legit, you're not thinking, I have to worry about these incredibly corrupt individuals running these incredibly dangerous companies in many ways, and I have to second guess that they're actually doing this to make money off me as opposed to take care of my needs. And so because of that, I feel incredibly sorry for her and anyone who gets hooked on the drugs that I've just talked about, because they are incredibly powerful. They're unbelievably effective at killing pain. And she has been through a hell of a lot of emotional and physical pain. And when you find something effective, it's really easy to get on that train. And getting off, unfortunately, when you're traveling at high speed down the addiction route, that's really challenging, really dangerous, and incredibly difficult to do. Now, after receiving treatment at a private rehab center, she just managed to kick the habit, which is incredible. Again, doesn't that just speak to her resilience? She gets her life back on track. Most importantly, she gets her daughters back. But then we have this period, 9 years, where she is absolutely managing and maintaining that reality. So she's done an incredible job of healing. So in April 2015, she basically begins a new relationship with someone that she'd reconnected with online. This guy's 40-year-old Michael William Slager. Now, bear in mind, like I said, she's got her life back on track. Everything had been going well. But it feels like one of those sliding doors moments where everything was going in the right direction and then one thing changes. And that one thing totally deplatforms somebody's life, and you start going down a completely different road. Literally, everything starts going downhill from here. So, for example, initially, Bonnie, so her mother, is really pleased. She's pleased that her daughter seems happy. She's pleased that she's met somebody. But the minute that she kind of connects with Slager, she feels on the back foot. She has reservations about him. There is a gut instinct. She doesn't like the way that he looked. Apparently he was covered in tattoos. We can all agree, being covered in tattoos is not something that should make anybody not like you. For example, nobody would like my husband. He's covered in them. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's a culmination for Bonnie of different things. And there is clearly something about his presence, his aura, his being, that just worries her. She didn't want her daughter to be around him, ideally. She certainly didn't want her daughter's children to be around him. But on...
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
On a particular day, Slager turns up and basically asks Bonnie to not judge him on his appearance. Now, when somebody does that, psychologically, it's really powerful. So if somebody surfaces a reality that is unspoken and makes you confront it, there's two ways to go. You can dig your heels in and say, no, there's absolutely something wrong with you. You look and feel like somebody I don't want to be around. But it's really difficult, particularly if somebody's surfaced it, because it says, I've noticed that you're not treating me how you seem to treat other people. And often it can make you think, I just need to put more effort in. Maybe I'm the one with the problem. Maybe I am being bigoted. Maybe I am being unkind. And it's a confident stretch to do that, you know, to actually confront somebody and say, I just think you need to give me a chance. Don't judge me. That is probably going to make Bonnie immediately feel that she has no other opportunity than to allow him a chance. So against her better instincts, that's exactly what she does. And from this point onwards, he gains the trust of Judy. He gains the trust of her family. But I would say Bonnie had that absolute mother's intuition. And it's one of those things that, again, we're taught in our society to be kind. We're taught to often ignore and play down our instincts. We're told that the reason that we have these negative feelings is because we have a problem. And we forget that, no, we're animals. We have animalistic instinct. Some things look, feel good and are. Some things look, feel bad and aren't. It's as simple as that. And like it or otherwise, for Bonnie, it feels like she sniffed him out really early on. And unfortunately, she is going to have to live the rest of her life knowing that those ideas that she had and worries that she had were really well founded. Bonnie was unbelievably close to her daughter. They literally spoke every day. And because they have this really connected, loving relationship, obviously they talk. And Judy starts talking to her mum about Slager's really controlling behavior. Apparently he was a horrific character. And this is gonna sound cruel, and I do appreciate that looks are not things that we all can control. I do appreciate that one person's beauty is another person's unattractive. But I genuinely feel about this man that he was just ugly on the outside and on the inside. I feel like the inside reflected and created the outside. You can have somebody who's not archetypally attractive in society who's beautiful, because there's just something so warm and endearing and amazing about them that even if they don't societally fit the archetype of what is being beautiful or what is even being pretty or what is being handsome, there is just something about them that makes them incredibly beautiful because of their character. But it's the opposite with this guy. And what's even worse is it turns out he's got this really long list of previous convictions. So it's a multitude of offences that we're talking about as well, including domestic violence. So not only has he been violent in the past, he's also been done for stalking, menacing behaviour, sexual battery, child endangerment, and many, many more. That list alone means that people like him should have, I don't know, somebody following him around 24/7 or some kind of camera system on him entirely the whole time that he's walking our streets. Because when you have that kind of a list of offences, you know it's highly unlikely that character is going to change. And you also know it's highly likely the damage that they're going to do to society is going to be enormous. And as expected, and as instinctually processed by Bonnie, he just starts to be this really poisonous influence in Judy's life. And the relationship itself was also really turbulent. It was very on-off. And that means the highs and lows. And again, that's really problematic because what you want in a good relationship is consistency. You want to know that the person's going to look and be and feel the same at the end of the day as they were in the beginning of the day. And when you don't have that, you can't regulate how your relationship is going to be. And it feels unsafe and it can cause a lot of psychological issues. Now, despite being aware of Judy's clear and absolutely devastating previous addiction issues, Slager gets her back onto drugs. Now, he's not a dealer himself. In fact, he's not even a user of drugs. And yet he starts to supply her on a daily basis with heroin. Now, the level of coercive control and the level of physical violence there is just off the chart. Because I know that he's not physically beating her by supplying her with drugs, but that is an act of violence physically. He knows exactly what her history has been like. He knows the impact and consequence, and he is actively going out and getting her drugs. And that's because he wants to fully control her. He wants to make her feel like she is fully reliant on him. This is just part of his controlling, coercive behavior. By making her dependent on him, by being coercive, by being abusive, he absolutely can limit her freedom and ensure that he is always required in her world. He even put a tracker on her phone so that he could keep tabs on her. I swear, people like this man need to be, I don't know, dissolved in sulfuric acid. Seriously, the kind of level of manipulation on this situation and on Judy's life is just despicable. He preys on Judy. He exploits the vulnerability when it comes down to drugs. She's a mother of two children. So as far as I'm concerned, he's also abusing them by proxy because he's removing her capacity and capability to be the mother that she wants to be. Also, he's so manipulative, he can even play Judy's family, and he does. So when she is seen to relapse, because obviously they're going to notice that she relapses, he acts like he's the victim. He acts like, oh, it's really hard for me because I'm in a relationship with a drug addict. So as a family member, because you've been there before and it's been frustrating and upsetting and you've been desperate and you just wanted the person that you love in the world to be better and get better, if somebody else is acting like they're the savior, they're going to stay. In spite of the fact that they're with this drug dependent, you are going to have a level of gratitude. And they do. They have a level of gratitude towards this absolute monster. Because he is not a savior. He is literally the absolute opposite. I mean, he's posing as this individual who's almost a martyr in a world, whereas actually he's just taking money so that he can also look after himself however he wants to. For example, asking Judy's mum whether she can help out because he needs help to pay Judy's bills, when actually he's just spending the money supplying her with further drugs. So it's a constant cycle of lies and also of coercive control that he's really effective at doing. Because of course, like I said, now he's got this perfect opportunity to look like the hero, when really he is the absolute villain in this piece. And he is also at this point really physically abusive to Judy. And her family notice because she starts getting covered in bruises, but also it's her reactions. She starts to seem really scared of him. She does things like hides in hotels and tries to escape him in that way. But he finds out where she is. He doesn't stay away. Even goes as far as reporting her to the police on several occasions. Because of course, if he doesn't get what he wants, and he can cause her really big problems, and bear in mind, if you've been reported to the police and you've got children, this can be a massive red flag for social services. So consequentially, she's going to be absolutely terrified about the implications of those kind of reports. But this is just another example of severe coercive control. If you think about the level that we're talking here, aside from the physical violence, he's literally controlling every move. He's stalking her essentially by making sure that he keeps tabs on her all the time. He's creating a false narrative to the family to make them feel that she's the problem and not him. And then if all else fails and she just tries to escape him for a while, he's calling the authorities to try to threaten her that way. So he's using every single angle as possible to control her, and he's doing it very effectively. Now, Judy starts to have this feeling that if she ever dares to leave him, he's going to murder her. And again, it's like Bonnie and her are keyed into that feeling. She has that sense of instinct. He's never going to let me go. He's never going to let anybody else have me. She's become his full-time fixation. And she's either going to do what he says or there are going to be consequences that are really severe. And so ultimately she's thinking, well, if I make the ultimate decision to remove myself from him, the consequence could be even more horrific than what I'm enduring now. And that could only mean one thing, which is that he might kill her. Now, ultimately, Judy realises she's got to get out of the relationship. And I guess that a lot of people feel that way at certain points when the coercive and physical violence gets to a point where it's just impossible to manage. And the other side of it is life just doesn't feel worth living. So I guess that when you get to a tipping point where your life doesn't feel worth living, you start to make decisions around whether it's best to just leave anyway, because there may be a really serious consequence. They may come after you in that way. They may try to kill you. Maybe they'll succeed, but hey, at least your pain will be over. I genuinely believe that some people get to that state. That's how terrorized they are. So even though she's made this decision now, she's going to get outside of the relationship, she's going to move forward, Slager's got absolutely other ideas. There is no way he is letting her go. No way whatsoever. And she is so scared that rightfully she goes to the police. She says, he's going to kill me. I just know he's going to kill me. And she goes multiple times, not once or twice. She goes multiple times. This is such a frustration, isn't it? When we see domestically violent situations play out and you see individuals go and ask the authorities for help. And the thing that comes back is, well, we're sorry. We haven't actually got any evidence he's going to kill you. Therefore, we can't do anything. And you're like, well, he's going to kill me. And that seems like a really final act. And you can't do anything after I'm dead. So could we not just think about some limits so that he doesn't have access to me, for example, or get some warnings? And it's like, well, no, he needs to do something bad. And then once you've been harmed or hurt or even worse, then maybe we can do something. Can you imagine the frustration and fear involved for a victim? It's just incomprehensible. Now, a family, they feel, and I would absolutely agree with them, 1,000,000,000%, they believe it's the bias that the police have because of the history of drug use. So they're like, oh, at the end of the day, can we really trust this drug user? Can we actually take her seriously? Is this just not some chaotic response? Can you imagine how that feels? You know, he got her on drugs. He became her supplier. He essentially controlled her by medicating her that way. And then when she finally elects to try to free herself, he makes sure, because of all the complaints he's made to the police, that they just look at her as another drug dependent who's simply just asking for help that firstly, she doesn't need, and secondly, she doesn't deserve. And that is such a crucifying experience because so many drug dependents are absolute victims. We get to the summer of 2015. At this point, Judy calls her mum and says that Slager's actually in her home and he won't go anywhere. He won't leave. Now, Bonnie goes to that property and that says something about Bonnie, doesn't it? It's like, okay, Slager is scary and certainly very controlling, but Bonnie ain't scared of him. At the end of the day, the mother's instinct, the mother's fire, that sense of how dare you put yourself in a position where you're controlling my child? The fact that she goes there just demonstrates the courage within her. And when she arrives, he is still present, really cocky, really arrogant. Apparently he was acting like he owned the place and refuses to leave. And Bonnie has obviously gone to try to negotiate and mediate and get him to leave peacefully, but he doesn't. So in the end, she calls the police and the officers then actually do go and physically remove him from the property. But like I said, you can imagine how Judy is feeling just without any power. Now, Judy at this point decides the only way that she can escape Slager and get her life back on track is to literally book herself back into rehab, because as far as she's concerned, that's her safe place and safe space. It's been successful before. She's been through the program before. So if she can get herself back in there, two things happen. One, she's going to be being treated for her addiction. And secondly, she's going to put distance between herself and Slager. So we get to the afternoon of Sunday, the 2nd of August, 2015. Now, Judy is 31 years of age at this point in time, and she sets off on the journey to the rehab center. Now, Slager had actually offered to take her, and she made a mistake. She really did. She made the mistake of accepting his offer. But again, when somebody has controlled you for such a long time, And when you try to appease them, because you don't want to set them off, you don't want to make things more difficult for yourself than they will be anyway, it makes sense to me that she would have been like, okay, thank you, because she probably doesn't want him to be really aware of the fact that she wants to leave him permanently. So she's offering him this opportunity to take her.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
To make him feel less isolated or abandoned because she wants to reduce any conflict. Now, he picks her up, set off, they stop to get cigarettes at a Speedway petrol station. This is in Gahanna, Ohio, and it's at this point they get into a confrontation. And you can imagine how pent up he would be. You know, she's going to actually take control of her life. She's going to go and get off the drugs, and that's going to mean that he hasn't got that level of control anymore. She's going to be focused. She's going to be healing. So she's going to be in a situation of power. He doesn't want that. So an argument breaks out behind the petrol station. And at this point, Slager's been just like horribly verbally abusive to her. And she gets to a point where ultimately she throws a drink in his face. Now, in response to her doing that, and okay, listen, we all appreciate throwing a drink in somebody's face is escalatory. It is not ideal. But also, when somebody is being highly verbally abusive to you or screaming in your face or shouting abuse at you, you just want it to stop. And of course, throwing a drink at somebody is not going to de-escalate the situation on a whole, but it's just something that you just think, please just stop shouting at me. Stop saying such nasty things to me. It's just such a horrible position to be in. And I think particularly females, and I know that there'll be males out there who've dealt with this as well, but when you have a man who is literally up in your face being grotesquely abusive with their words and just screaming and shouting, you just need it to end. And I can imagine that she was in that situation in that moment. Now, in response to that, he just clouts her, just hits her. So he takes it to a whole different level of physicality, because when you get a drink thrown over you, like your shirt gets wet, end of, that's it. When you punch somebody in the face, you're going to hurt them badly. But that's not enough for him. So he goes to his vehicle and he comes back with two cans of petrol. Like, first off, why did he have two cans of petrol in his vehicle? Like, why are you driving around in an already flammable vehicle at speed, because that's what cars are, with an extra two cans of petrol in there? That to me says there is absolutely a level of premeditation. So he gets these two cans of petrol that he just happens to be driving around with, then in broad daylight, literally pours it all over her. And she must have known how dangerous this was. She must have known that he was doing this with full intent, because she ends up begging on the ground, just pleading with him to stop. Some even goes down her throat. She is literally drenched. Then he goes back to his vehicle. Now, apparently at that point, it was like he was appearing to drive away, but then he just turns around, walks back towards Judy, and he's retrieved a cigarette lighter. You can't even begin to compute where her mind would be in that moment. The idea that you are totally vulnerable, totally helpless, you are covered in a highly flammable and toxic fluid, you've got some in your throat, and then this man who has been so violent to you in the past, so controlling towards you in the past, has returned with a cigarette lighter, and you know he has the capacity to use it. And she's crying and she's asking him, why are you doing this? She says, I'll get in the truck, I'll go with you. But he's now on a power trip. He has absolutely no care, consideration or concern about the real impact of what's going to happen. He just likes being back in control. And he just ignores those pleas. And instead, he bends down and he uses the lighter and he just sets her alight. Now, bear in mind, she's covered. So she's immediately engulfed in flame. She's completely on fire. She's staggering around the grass. She's screaming in agony. She apparently manages to get to her feet several times and then she falls back to the ground. And Slager stands and watches her burn. The only comfort I take from that sentence is, Slager, get used to that burning. Because whilst it's temporary for Judy, you're going to have a whole eternity of it, mate. So it's going to be hotter than what you've ever dreamed as well. That's the only thing that I can draw from this that makes me feel like I don't want to go and find him and physically adjust his behaviour based on the kind of human being that he is, because it is grotesque. Imagine having such little empathy that you can watch a mother of two literally staggering to her feet, falling over, burning to death in front of you, melting. And let me tell you, with the actual heat that she would be engulfed in, that's what's happening. Everything is melting. Her features, everything. Her humanity, her uniqueness, her individual self. It's just being distorted second by second. Judy, apparently, when she was going through that, just thought she was going to die. She just thought there was no chance that she was going to be okay. She apparently prayed to Jesus to forgive her sins. She asked him to look after her children, and then everything goes black. Now, a witness who'd actually seen all this play out, they ran over straight away. I mean, that is heroic. And that says something about the pro-social nature of that individual, to run towards the flames, literally, as opposed to stand and watch or just call emergency services. And of course, at this moment, Slager, they're unaware that this witness has seen everything. All they know is that somebody's now coming to help. So as soon as he sees that other person, he's like trying to protect his own skin, isn't he? So he grabs a fire extinguisher, kicks himself into action, and at that point puts out the flames, and he's burned in the process whilst he does that. But by that stage, it's all irrelevant. The damage is done. There's no way that Judy is ever going to get to live a normal life again. There's no way that Judy's life is not transformed forever in that moment. He'd done the work. And he only picked up that fire extinguisher to try to make himself look less culpable, because he's obviously starting to think, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this, so I better create some kind of story, concoct some kind of reality, and have a witness that saw me try to help. But of course, that isn't going to play out how he wishes it to play out. So that witness calls 911, and apparently it's almost hysterical at the time. And she says, look, I've just watched a man set a woman on fire at the petrol station. So police get there, paramedics get there really quickly, and Slager at this point is taken to hospital, treated for his burns, of course, because now again he's going to be playing the victim role, isn't it? Oh, I was just trying to help. Honestly, genuinely, there should be some kind of medication that's permanent for these kind of individuals when they arrive at hospital, because they are a blight on our humanity, aren't they? Slager is an absolute blight on our humanity. Now, they rush Judy to Ohio State University Hospital. She's, by this point, in an utterly critical condition. When she arrives, understandably, the doctors think that her prognosis is absolutely dire beyond belief. Because what they have to do when they're looking at a burns victim is they basically need to decide whether they think there's a likelihood of them succumbing to their injuries. And this is literally taken from the facts in the report, based on her injuries. So based on the factors, including things like the age and the severity of burns, they will look at the likelihood of survival. In Judy's case, I kid you not, the figure was 110% mortality. So basically they assessed that there was not a hope in hell that Judy was ever going to survive her injuries. They believed that she'd be dead within a matter of hours. They said at the longest it would be days. At this point, Judy is placed on life support, and doctors obviously, in spite of this horrible prognosis, desperately want to save her life, because even though they think she's only going to be alive for a few hours or a few days at best, the point is she has a family who adore her. They have a right to say goodbye. So saving her life isn't about the long haul. It's about allowing people of massive meaning to be able to hold her hands and cradle her into the next life. And so they worked so hard to do that. Now, of course, we have Judy's mum completely unaware of this. As far as she's concerned, her daughter's going off to rehab. It's a great situation. Everything's going to be okay. She's going to cut this flappy appendage of an ex off and she's going to get well. And then suddenly she gets a call. Judy's been seriously hurt. She just rushes to her daughter's side. And on the way through hospital, she actually spots Slager being treated for his burns. And at this point, she goes in and says, look, where's my daughter? Because he's there. She knows that he was with her. So she wants to know what the hell has happened to Judy. And he immediately just lies. Says, oh, it's been an accident. So basically he's trying to create this picture again, just like with the drugs, where it's not his fault. It's just an unfortunate consequence of this awful accident that his daughter is going to die potentially and that he's been burnt. Now, the nurses actually end up moving her out. And I imagine that's because damn straight, they know that they're dealing with a predator and they don't want mother anywhere near him. And the doctors actually have to say to Judy's mum, you're not going to recognise your daughter. You know, the injuries are serious. And preparing a mother for that, it is incomprehensible for anybody who's got children. The idea of a doctor saying to you, you might not even recognise the child that you birthed, it's harrowing beyond belief. And in reality, even though they prepared Judy's mother for that, she had absolutely no conception of what she was actually going to see, because Judy is literally completely unrecognisable. She didn't even look human, is what her mother said. And Bonnie remembered just screaming, tell me there's hope. It's one of those statements that says everything. You know, she's not concerned about the fact that her daughter has been horribly disfigured. She's not concerned about the work that will need to be done to make sure that one day she can bring her child home. All she needs is somebody to say, there's hope, because that's what she will cling on to. That's what she'll work towards. She doesn't care about the pain, the process, the years that it might take. Just let me know that my child will be okay. Now, meanwhile, her other daughter, Danielle, has actually arrived before her and already seen Judy. And she was actually in the hospital corridor and she was being violently sick as the nurses were tending to her. And people who have been around burns units, people who have seen individuals who've had literally their whole features eradicated by fire, it's not just the way they look, it's the way they smell, it's the complete mix of totally inhuman realities all colliding in the same moment. It's clear that not only do you have to deal with the personal trauma of somebody that you love being so horrifically affected, it's dealing with all of the sights, the sounds and the smells of something so foreign to what you're used to. So being violently sick makes perfect sense. Now, of course, what is Slager doing during this period? Oh, he's just protesting his innocence to the police, said that Judy had apparently accidentally got petrol on herself whilst filling up the truck. Yeah, she just accidentally poured two canisters of petrol all over herself. I mean, I go to the petrol station maybe three or four times a week because I travel a lot. And if I'm not constantly having to have somebody near me with a towel and putting a little cordoned area around me with some yellow tape, because if I don't have that, I'll be pouring it all over my face, in my throat, over my clothes. It's just normal. I don't know how these petrol stations aren't going up in smoke all the time. It's constant, isn't it? It's not like you have 50,000 cars a week going through with nobody even getting a burn. But in this case, yes, apparently not only had she got petrol all over herself, she then accidentally caught fire when accidentally lighting a cigarette for herself. I mean, we've all done it, haven't we? We've all been there on a petrol forecourt, covered in petrol, thinking, oh God, it's a bit stressful. Can't believe I've covered myself in petrol. Oh, you know what I need? A cigarette. Could somebody please pass me a highly flammable connection? Thank you, that lighter will do perfectly. Whoosh! Come on. You can imagine, can't you, the police officers in their heads imagining all the things they'd like to do to this absolute coward. Because for 1 second, they are not going to believe what he's saying. And they will know the damage that has been done. And they are human beings, police officers and doctors. And they will feel that righteous rage. And listening to this weasel of a liar concocting this absolute travesty of a story, it will have hurt their ears, their hearts, and their brains to even entertain the absolute pathological liar. And of course, on top of the fact that he's talking about the fact that she basically blew herself up, he's also going on about how much he loves her, how he was taking her to rehab. So taking those kind of small elements of the story, amplifying them to try to give him reputational positivity. But he may as well have just stood there going, nah, 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 because obviously there's loads of strong evidence. It's obvious it was deliberate. There's been witnesses there. The sheer extent of Judy's injuries absolutely failed to fit with his version of events because she's been burning for a period of time. It's not just one witness who's seen him arguing with Judy before setting her alight. There's been a lot. And on top of that, CCTV footage from this nearby bank supports what's happened, the reality of it. Clearly shows Sligger pouring petrol over Judy. They actually watch on that CCTV as he pours it over her head, all down her back. So he's banged to rights. But of course, at this point, Sligger thinks, oh God, you know what? This is a bit problematic because I'm literally in real time being recorded and my crime is evident. So then it's like, well, I need to make myself seem less guilty. How can I do that? Oh, I know. Just as Judy threw that drink on me and ruined my clothes, because that's what happens. Apparently Sligger is not aware of things like dry cleaning places or, just gonna throw it out there, guys, washing machines. I mean, I'm sure, like you all, if I drop something on me, like I'm drinking a Diet Coke and it ends upon my shirt, it's like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to throw that shirt again. Because obviously, you get rid of all clothes that you put any drink over. But yeah, this is his absolute contention. So because she drew into his clothes with a drink, he thought, I'm gonna ruin your clothes with petrol. Genuinely, what kind of a brain is going on with this man? A very small one, and a very easy to find out lies from one. But anyway, this is what he says. I just chucked petrol on her to ruin her clothes, but I was never gonna set her alight. I was just lighting a cigarette for her, says no one ever within 10 feet of petroleum, because you would have to be literally an infant child with no life experience to not know what happens when petrol and a lit flame get anywhere near one another. But this is what he's doing. He's so narcissistic, he so believes that he can be superior and control the environment around him that he genuinely thinks that they're gonna buy into this BS, in spite of the fact that the police are dealing with a woman who has literally almost been burnt to death. Almost. Now, it goes without saying that Judy's injuries were absolutely horrific. In fact, one of her daughters didn't even recognise that she'd been so badly deformed by the flames. When you look at degrees, when it comes down to first, second, third, fourth degrees, I rarely, and I mean rarely, even ever hear about people surviving fourth degree burns. But Judy had suffered third and fourth degree burns to 95% of her body. They are literally the most serious burns that you can have. They go through every single layer of the skin.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
All the underlying tissue as well. As well as that, they go to even deeper tissue. They literally destroy nerve endings, they damage muscle, they damage bone. And what happens is your body will end up just covered in open wounds, and those open wounds won't heal. So she has had entire sections of her body burnt away, and it's not going to be recoverable. Now her hair, her eyelashes, her eyebrows, they'd all burned away. She'd lost her ears, she'd lost several fingers, and she was left virtually blind. But what's really unbelievable is she was actually conscious and she was even aware of what was happening. Now, a police officer was actually able to speak to her, and she was able to inform that police officer that she hadn't spilt the petrol on herself at all and that Slager had poured it on her. So she's now given them the information that they need to say, on top of all the other evidence, we have the victim who's saying this individual assaulted her and set her on fire. At that point, she's then put into a medically induced coma, and thank God Slager's arrested. Now, initially, the prosecutors did try to delay criminal action against Slager because Judy's injuries were just so serious that they thought, well, she's going to die soon, so we need to then charge him with murder. So they just kind of have this interim where they want to plan to charge him at that point. But Judy has the heart of a lion, the soul of a warrior, and she just defies the doctor's prognosis. So despite all these appalling injuries that I've talked about, she clings to life. And then 7 months after that heinous, horrific, grotesque attack, she wakes up. Now, at this point, prosecutors charge Slager with aggravated arson, possession of criminal tools, and assault. And Judy, well, she's due to give video testimony at his trial. However, his lawyer actually advised him against giving her the opportunity. And the reason for that is he said, listen, you don't want to let this woman give any evidence at trial because the way that she looks is going to make that jury find you guilty immediately. And also, he didn't want her to appear because apparently the testimony under oath could then be used again at a further murder trial if she dies from her injuries. So instead of a trial happening and Slager saying he wasn't guilty, at the last minute he pleads no contest to the offences. So this denies Judy the opportunity to testify against him. So then a year after the attack, that's in December 2016, 41-year-old Slager is sentenced to the maximum possible for the crimes that we've just outlined, and that is 11 years. Sorry? Yeah, 11 years. Sorry, have I just gone into a parallel universe where you can literally, purposefully, willfully, and in a premeditated context, set fire to a human being, watch them burn, and then only serve 11 years for doing that? This is correct. Can I please go immediately to planet for realistic, harsh sentence deserved in cases like this? I'm sorry that doesn't exist. Well, we need to make it exist. Genuinely? 11 years? Are you kidding me? For somebody who's had their life completely capsized and permanently ruined? I mean, 11 years for dousing someone in petrol, setting them alight, causing them disfiguring, life-changing injuries? And genuinely, do you want to hear something completely off the wall? He would have received a similar sentence if he'd set a car on fire. Genuinely. They say the law's an ass, and in this case, it is an enormous ass. How can it possibly be that setting a car on fire could result in the same kind of sentence as setting an incalculably priceless human on fire? Now, all the while, Judy is going through excruciating procedures after excruciating procedures. They're attempting to repair some of this extensive damage and also, of course, to keep her alive. She actually underwent 60 surgeries. She had multiple skin grafts and she had 7 cardiac arrests, which all required her to be resuscitated. She couldn't walk and she was barely even able to speak. Even when she had to have her dressings regularly changed, it was torture for her, it was agony. And she's going through all of this whilst that utter loser is being fed 3 times a day on a sentence that is so laughable, it's embarrassing to talk about. Now, given this horrifically intensive treatment that she required, her medical bills were growing through the roof. And this is gonna absolutely destroy you when I say this, genuinely, because when we think about injustice, we already have a major one. This monster has got this tiny sentence, but then these bills are going through the roof, none of which Judy has caused because she's a victim and her mum actually tries to claim for victim's assistance. So because Judy had drugs in her system at the time of the offence, she wasn't even classed as a victim in the eyes of the law. Yeah, apparently her association with drugs that meant the police hadn't given her the protection that she needed in the first place and caused, certainly, partially, how now she's burned beyond recognition. Apparently she's not a victim still because at the end of the day, she had drugs in her system. It's like, you're not a victim if you get raped with drugs in your system. You're not a victim and you get literally beaten to a pulp if you've got drugs in your system. Apparently not. Apparently, if you've got drugs in your system, it's just a free-for-all. Criminals should only go for people with drugs in the system in this situation because then they'll get absolutely no support in the medical system, which is just a further way of controlling and damaging this individual. So yeah, she gets no help. And you can imagine how much those bills are growing. I mean, it's astronomical in the States anyway. You're talking millions and millions and millions. And when you have a child who is in that situation, you are going to be absolutely desperate to do everything you can within your power to make sure that they're given the best care. And ultimately, when you're fighting a system like that, it's just another wound inflicted to an already grotesque wound created by another. Now, as the months pass, Judy, like I said, is an unbelievable warrior. She continues to defy the doctor's prognosis. And no one can believe that she has survived more than a few hours, let alone the months and months that go by. But the doctors know this isn't going to be a permanent thing. It's a matter of time. She's going to die of her injuries without a shadow of a doubt. She's just absolutely outlived the amount of months we imagined. They knew that the injuries would kill her. They just didn't quite know when. Now, when the inevitable happened, of course, prosecutors, rightly so, they planned to have Slager charged with the murder. So they approached Judy. This is when she's still alive. And they literally asked for something that had never, ever been asked for before. They asked her to provide testimony for her own murder trial. And I don't know how it would feel for a prosecutor to have that conversation. Because you're basically saying you're a dead woman. And you are going to be dead at some point, and we want to try this person for your murder, but you are alive and you are processing this conversation and you are having to come to a conclusion based on that and make a decision as to whether you want to do it. The prosecutor, when the time came, really wanted the jury to hear direct evidence from Slager's victim. They wanted her words. her feelings, her agony, her pain, all to be expressed. They wanted the woman, with every detail about what played out on that fateful day, to have her voice heard. They wanted to hear about the horrific impact it had on her life. They wanted to let the jury see the crucial reality of what occurred. When Judy had first seen herself in a mirror, when she woke from the coma, she'd actually vowed for her attacker to receive the punishment he deserved. So when the prosecutor said, "Would you give us a formal testimony?" she agreed. But it wasn't that simple, guys. It wasn't as if she could just give a statement. No, because you know how a defense team will work. A defense team will work to throw out the admission that occurs regarding the causation of her injuries through the actual witness and victim talking. They will go and try to have it not admitted to the case because it will be so powerful. So if she wants to give that admission of testimony, then Judy has to be weaned off all of those incredibly strong painkillers that she was constantly on because she was in constant agony. And bear in mind, she was in constant agony whilst on the maximum dose of her painkillers. So being on far lower doses, it was going to be excruciating, a pain far beyond agony for her. But she had to be lucid enough. She had to be of sound mind enough to answer questions from both the defence and the prosecution. Now, before she gets filmed, she actually told her mother that the pain was so bad she didn't want to do it, but that she knew she had to because she wanted that killer to go down for life. Can you imagine the strength of character that you have to be able to go through what we're talking about? And also, just that strength that she gets thinking, "I am going to steal your life too," because I think that would be such a primary motivation. He took her from her children and he's going to take her permanently from her children at some point. So just knowing that maybe she will prevent him ever harming another person is the thing that drives her. She wants to protect all the women in the process. She wants to make sure he'll never hurt anyone again. Now, incredibly, when Slager heard that she was going to testify, he wanted to be in the hospital room with her so that he could personally cross-examine her. Narcissist of the highest level. Genuinely, he wants to cross-examine her, does he? Seriously, the only cross that should be involved in any interaction between those two is Judy with a crossbow and him not able to leave the room until she's finished doing whatever she wishes to do. Anyway, the judge, because they have sanity, overrules the request. Now, whilst giving evidence, Judy can only talk in a really quiet, halting voice because, first of all, she's got loads of damage caused to her throat. She's got real difficulty even breathing. On top of that, you can imagine the agony that she's going through when she's trying to form sentences. Now, she described the attack to the court. She said that Slager's eyes turned black as he'd approached her with the lighter. She said he just looked evil, how he just stood there and did absolutely nothing, didn't try to help as she was engulfed in the flames that he created. And then she also goes on to talk about the agony that she experienced in her day-to-day life, the multitude of painful operations she'd had to suffer, the 7 resuscitations she'd endured. Now, in total, she was questioned by the defense and prosecution attorneys for 3 excruciating hours. It took an intolerable physical toll on her. Now, despite the fact that she had her life completely destroyed by Slager, Judy actually always said she did not want him put to death. She didn't want him to be executed. And she is a far stronger person than me. Because genuinely, when I imagine what he did to that poor woman, I just want him to suffer the same kind of pain. And I'm sure lots of you feel exactly the same. When it gets to mid-2017, she tells the mum that she's tired of the pain. And so the decision is made that she's moved to a hospice and her treatment stopped. I can't even begin to compute how a mother would feel knowing that their child has made a decision to put themselves out of their misery, but also as a mother to know that I'm choosing to put myself out of a misery when I've got children. That is just difficult on every single level. On the 27th of June 2017, that's less than 5 months after giving that testimony, she died of organ failure. Her mother had actually told her that she would stay with her all the way, that she'd hold her hand until Jesus took the other hand. At one point, her mother actually stood. She let go of her hand for just a few seconds, and in that moment, Judy died. She was just 33 years old. She'd managed to survive 700 excruciatingly pain-filled days before finally succumbing to her injuries. Her mother had stayed by her side the whole time. It just demonstrates the beauty of that very special mother-daughter relationship that existed between the two of them. Now, following her death, which at least to some degree was within her control, at least she made that choice. At least she had the opportunity to say no more. And at least she had given all the evidence that she required so that 43-year-old Slager was charged with aggravated murder. Now, the defence, of course, did their best to try to get Judy's testimony excluded, which is something that we expect to see. Although, why, no matter what you're fighting for and what you believe in job-wise, you would want somebody like this monster walking around at risk to women everywhere just so that you get to win a case, I don't know. But they obviously want to get that excluded. And then the prosecution, they say, you know what? We want to pursue the death penalty. So arguably, in spite of the fact that Judy didn't want that for Slager, they're pursuing it because they feel that what he did to her deserved it. Now, eventually a plea deal is ultimately offered to Slager. And the plea is that he has to plead guilty to murder and be sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. And that's actually with respect what Judy had wanted. He, of course, accepted the deal because he doesn't want to have his life taken, doesn't he? He doesn't want to have what happened to her.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
That happened to him, and that basically means that he does indeed avoid the death penalty. Now, at his hearing in July 2018, Judy's testimony was played to the court. It's the first time in US legal history that evidence from the grave was given by the actual victim and that was actually allowed into a murder trial. Judy was an absolute hero because not only did she have the wherewithal and internal strength to go through the agonizing, excruciating pain of reducing the pain medication so she was lucid enough to give evidence, she made sure that no other woman will ever be a victim of Slager. She was also instrumental in changing the state law in Ohio. So together with her family, she actually campaigned from her hospital bed for an increase in the maximum punishment for violent offenders who disfigure or disable victims. And on the 7th of September 2017, Judy's law came into force in Ohio. That increases the maximum sentence for such offences from 11 years to 17 years. I still don't think it's enough. I think if you set somebody on fire like that, or you pour acid over their face and you debilitate their lives and rob their families of futures with them, you genuinely should receive a much sterner sentence. But I'm glad that Judy's law exists, and I have incredible respect for the family who fought for that. Judy's daughters were actually there to see it signed into law. And her youngest daughter stated, "Mommy didn't die in vain." The family actually now want to see it become national law. So they want to make a profound difference to the legal system. Now, following Judy's death, her mother actually took care of her two daughters. And Judy said, "Please, I really want you to make sure that they go to college." And because they had no inheritance, because obviously she'd had her life stolen, she just desperately wanted them to be successful. They'll now be around 16 and 19 years of age, and I hope to goodness that they are following their dreams and that they are ensured the success that they absolutely deserve after the trauma that they've suffered. Judy's family genuinely hope that the legacy that they've created is going to save other women. They want this tragic case to just serve to others as a warning for those in abusive relationships to say, these things happen. Don't believe the best in your abusive partner. Believe in their potential for the worst. Look at what happened to our loved one and act getting free. Change your life. Move yourself from these situations because you deserve so much more. They've also set up Judy's Foundation in her name, and that aims to help families and individuals who are suffering from domestic violence or drug abuse and human trafficking by promoting healing and reconstruction within the natural family unit, all about bringing people back together after life has torn them so far apart. The strength that Judy showed was incredible. She lived for nearly 2 years in 24/7 agony. She made it through every single day just so she could bring some good into the world. And I guess she managed to do that in spite of the fact that she had to suffer so greatly to do so. For her mother, the thing that apparently continues to hurt her is that Slager's not sorry for what he did. He remains completely unrepentant. He doesn't care about his actions, and he certainly doesn't care about the consequences. But you know who does? The big G.O.D. And I don't know, on the day that he gets carried out in a box from his incarceration, he'll already no doubt be going down thousands of miles per hour to the annals of hell, where, I don't know, a group of individuals can take turns dousing him in petrol and taunting him with matches and lighters and, I don't know, flamethrowers, until he realises the agony that he caused and has a whole eternity to repent on that reality. Because thankfully, he is going to take his last breath in prison. And let's be honest, because of Judy and her family's strength, he's never going to get to harm another woman. And he's never going to be loved in the way that Judy was loved. He'll never be given a legacy of care like she has. No one's going to remember his weaselly little name in the end because he's a pathetic excuse for a man and a human being. And now he has the rest of his years to rot in jail, considering that reality.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.